Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Reset and hit you with the crown topic of the day. I don't know if I love the crown topic anymore. I got to be honest. I love the song.
What?
I hate calling it the crown. Why do we call it the crown?
I have no idea.
Well, I know why. Because that was when we initially came up with the idea to reset at 12 o'clock.
And no, I know, but what is like the crown? Well,
that's
I guess
what I'm
you acknowledge,
well,
you recognize, like crown the champion, crown, well, identify. Yeah, it's, I guess.
No, but it starts with because of the song. I really wanted the song. I love that song, Down with the King.
Mm-hmm.
So then it was a playoff of that in our creative meetings with other people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why not just call it the crown? And I was like, yeah, whatever. Okay, fine. I just want the song in there. Anyway, maybe we could revisit that. But it is the... The crown topic.
I like the song,
but
too.
It doesn't make any sense because down with the king, the crown thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, main topic of the day, we started talking about Juan Soto, of course, and we referenced the article from NJ.com. Well, I forget. I'm sorry. What was the guy's name?
Randy Miller.
Oh, Randy Miller. Randy Miller talking about how the Red Sox are a legitimate threat. I'm just not buying it. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. I think the Red Sox are in the race for him. As far as being a legitimate threat, I don't think they're going to have more money than the Mets, and they don't have the history or prestige or ballpark or better winning culture than the Yankees, so I think they lose out to both New York teams.
Listen, I really thought that, and I still do, that the Mets will be a massive threat here. I always kind of position Toronto as, hey, listen, I don't think he's going there. I'm pretty sure he's not, but just watch them because Toronto's going to drive up the price. Because the pockets of the Rogers group, they could just play the poker and play slow games as long as they're long games, as long as they want. And now you got the Red Sox complicating the Yankees world. Like, that's how I view this from a Yankees perspective, because you know where I stand on the other teams, and I think the Red Sox are viable. And it seems, I don't overreact. I barely react when you hear, oh, you know, Soto had an amazing meeting with so-and-so. Oh, the meeting went so well. I get to hear that a meeting was horrendous and they didn't get along and that the courtship is over. You haven't heard that yet. You're playing the game, and I get that. You drum up the interest. But I think when you boil it down to a couple of factors with the Red Sox, whether it's their history, whether it's their ballpark, which I think is a major enticement for Juan Soto, who I think could hit 325, 330, and he's not that kind of hitter, never has been. I think in Boston he can be. I think their success ratio, not the last couple of years, but this century, which is certainly more than the Yankees and a lot more than the Mets. I think the Dominican influence, not only Devers, who would be a teammate and probably bat behind them, Big Poppy, Pedro, and I think there's also been an assurance, maybe more so, I would think, definitely than the Yankees, maybe comparable to the Mets, that, hey, we get you, and we're also doing X and Y. We need you to complete the mathematical equation. So I'm not saying he's going to the Red Sox, but I think the Red Sox are right at the table and they are prominently featured.
Yeah, to me, they'd have to outbid the Mets. I don't think that's going to happen. And again, I think the Yankees would still be a better. I think Soto really wants to be a Yankee here. And we got into it pretty good for the first hour of the show. Check it out in case you missed it on the Free Odyssey app. Let's just further the conversation, BT.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing new. We've had this before, but let's just have it now as we get closer to an eventual decision. And everybody's expecting, even the majority of reporters are expecting Soto to make a decision by the winter meetings, which is next week by the latest. So we can kind of agree on that. How much money, where he goes, who knows. But at this point, where would you put your percentage as far as Mets, Yankees, Red Sox for Soto? Even if maybe you don't want to give me a percentage.
I can break it up for you.
Okay.
All right. So to me, Toronto's 5%. But again, their influence is really heavy here because they're going to drive up the price. He's not going there, but they're changing the way things are going.
Right.
I would say right now, I'm going to actually do this. I'm going to go 30% Yankees, Mets, and Red Sox, and 10% Toronto.
I mean, come on.
He asked me for a percentage. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, come on.
What?
You're going to pick something. It's not the picking anything.
Sometimes you're such a simpleton. I did pick something. What I did was that by saying 30%, I'm telling you that I think all three have a real chance to sign them. You want me to make something up to make you happy?
No.
Tell me what you want me to say.
I'd like you to give me an order of your gut feel of where you think he goes. The ranking, 1, 2, 3. Like, if I asked Hoff, what is your rank? Just forget Toronto for a second. Red Sox, Yanks, Mets. Give me your order or percentage or whatever. Red Sox, Yanks, Mets that Soto goes to.
Mets are going to be number one.
At? You have a percentage or no?
I don't care about percentage, but I'll say 50%.
Okay.
I'll say that the Yankees are at 28%.
I mean... So this is more interesting than my 30%.
But the Red Sox are third, and they're at 20, whatever the rest of
22 would be the math on that. All right. Yeah, I mean, I wanted some blood from you. We're getting 50-50-50.
Listen, don't you think the fact that for a long time I was saying he ain't leaving New York, now the fact that I'm putting the Red Sox on the same line as the Yankees and the Mets told you that I've shifted my thought process?
Right, well, usually we've had just the Mets or Yankees percentage where you were 52, I think, Mets.
Maybe changed it a little bit. Slightly in Mets by a couple percent. I think it's changing a little bit.
Yeah,
I really do.
I still am not. Now, look, I could be proven totally wrong here. I'm still not buying the Red Sox. I'm going to go Mets way higher on the list, and I still go Yankees number two. I think the Red Sox are a smoke screen. I said this yesterday for the Yankees. Like, to me, if I'm looking at this from the outside using common sense, the idea that the Red Sox are being talked up is only showing me Soto wants to be with the Yankees more and is trying to get them to up their bid to match the Red Sox.
Listen, I think that that's a logical way of looking at it. If you're Boris...
Doesn't mean it's right. It's just...
No. But I don't think it's crazy. If you're Boris, you're sitting there saying, all right, how can I drum up the most interest? Now, the interest is basically generated just by his talent.
Right.
But how can I push this to the edge of the cliff and make everybody think that, you know, it's really up in the air? Well, let's see.
I want to get the Yankees up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But from Boris's perspective, all right, Mets heavily involved, check. Mets are trying to take over New York. Well, obviously, that'll entice the Yankees to hang around a little bit longer. Mets are involved. The Red Sox, they've been dead for a couple of years. Let's revive the Red Sox and, you know, present this Boston Renaissance and get their greatest rival involved. Check. And then, you know, the fact that Toronto's on the periphery, coming with $1 gazillion in all probability. You know, I just think that they played this very well, but it doesn't mean that the longer Boston hangs around, that he can't become incredibly intrigued by them. I think he is intrigued by Boston.
Yeah, I know.
I think he's intrigued by staying with the Yankees. I think he's intrigued by the Mets. I don't think he's intrigued by Toronto.
I think you make compelling. Like, I like the history of the Red Sox myself. I like Fenway Park and watching that team. And of course, I like the history of Ortiz and Pedro Martinez. I just don't believe that they're going to have enough to compete with the Yankees or the Mets for different reasons. All those things that we said about the Red Sox pertains to the Yankees, and the money should be the big factor for the Mets. Now, if all things are equal, then I think he's going to the Yankees. If the Mets pay more money, I think he's going to the Mets. And ultimately, I stand by the Mets paying more money, maybe not as much as Toronto. And if they don't, I still, like, it's not an excuse for me to say, well, Toronto went nuts. No, Steve Cohen, to get this player, if he really wants him, has to go nuts here. The Mets can't lose this one.
You've been saying that. I get it. I mean, listen, I'd be saying the same thing if I'm you, because everything about Cohen's arrival, here it is. You're in the batter's box, and it's dead red fastball.
Time to drive in a run.
Yeah, quite probable, or quite probably, it's, you know, you're going to get one swing like this at a guy like this. As long as Steve Cohen can own the Mets for 30 more years, he might not ever have this unique of a situation. So, no, listen, you've been consistent. I get that. I think that the only thing that's different about this is the Yankees, like, I want to get back to Boston for a second, you know, you talk about, like, and again, the money's the money. That's going to take care of itself. We can offer as much conjecture as we want, 7, 7, 28, whoever the hell knows. I don't know what he's going to get. He's going to get paid, right? But the Yankees winning lineage, let's not overstate it, because last year they had Soto, they got to the World Series, mm-hmm. and they were very good. The year before, they didn't have Juan Soto, they didn't get to the World Series, they didn't make the playoffs, they weren't very good. And the year before this year, when the Mets had a nice season, they were not good the year before that at all. So I think we're kind of overstating what the Yanks and the Mets were before this past season, whereas with Boston, again, I asked Sal the question an hour and a half ago, and I don't know the answer, but I think it's interesting to knock around. The Red Sox won 82 games a year, 81, 82 games last year. You put Juan Soto in the two or the three hole. Do they win 85 or 86? And if they're a little bit better and they're more mid-80s-ish, I don't know, does that incentivize ownership to make a move mid-season that maybe puts them over the hump and maybe they get 88, 89 wins and they're a wild card team? So I don't think the Red Sox, this is one of the fundamental differences you and I have. I don't think the Red Sox are nearly as far off from being pretty competitive. Their farm system right. is good.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're competitive.
They're coming.
But I still think if you're valuing winning, you look at more recent success last year, Mets, Yankees, or the Yankees have had it sustained. The one thing, BT, and this is very possible yet again for the Mets. They have the owner. They have the money. They had some success a year ago. They have some pieces in place. And there's reason to believe that they could be turning things around to finally, once and for all, be a sustained, successful franchise, have some sustained success for a change. But they also still don't have that cachet, that pedigree that the Yankees or even the Red Sox have. And there is
they'll probably never have that, by the way. Well, I mean, the Red Sox and the Yankees got a big head start, and they won a lot.
Correct. Maybe never. But if they don't win this one, what does that say for the Mets' quote-unquote brand, where even the most money with a good infrastructure, coming off a very successful year out of nowhere, projecting to be very good moving forward, if they don't win this one, and Soto does, say, take the Red Sox money, leaves the Yankees because the Red Sox have more money and he still gets the procedure, whatever, but turns the Mets down.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that is, if Juan Soto takes less money to go anywhere but remain with the Yankees, that is, to me, the worst thing that could happen to Steve Cohen and the Mets brand.
That's pretty much rock bottom, at least from a PR perspective, and temporarily. Yeah, there'd be a diminishment in how the Mets brand, this evolving, growing brand, is perceived.
But meaning, who could you get?
Well, I'll tell you what, though. You don't want to hear this because I know how much you want Juan Soto, but if you guys swing and miss on Juan Soto, you could still be a better team than you'd be with Juan Soto next year.
I know, but
which
I'm,
could then lead to sustained success unconventionally. I get it. You want the big dog. You want to reel in
you're being
the big trophy fish. I get it.
Well, at some point, it would be nice to be able to land that.
Did you think? Now, you were too young, and so was I. I didn't really think it. I didn't process this when I was 9 years old. But when the Mets got Keith Hernandez in 83.
Different.
The Mets were, I know, and the game's trade. Different. So much is different. It was a trade midseason, understood.
Also, but 40 years ago.
There's a lot different about that. I understand. But the Mets had shown not even a trace of being remotely competitive. The Mets from, like, 77 up until the point that they got Keith, they were a doormat. There was 12,000 people in Queens. They were horrendous. They were a minor league operation. Then they got Keith, and then you had the guys popping in the system, and then, you know, they should have won more championships, but 86, one of the best teams of all time. So I know you want Soto, and I know that there's a correlation in the minds of you and others, and I get this. If you get Soto, that next step's going to be easier, and sustainability, and all the things that you want and crave and chasing forever, and that might be true. But if you miss Soto and you do the right things and player development with Stearns and things that you don't care about as much now, but you will when they come to fruition, you could be in a better spot in a couple of years without Soto. You can be.
I still think they'll build a fine team, but they need to get to that next level. They need Soto plus. And I made excuses for Yamamoto. Ohtani wanted no part in New York. There is no excuse for this guy. If he chooses the one thing, if he comes back in the Yankees, if he chooses the Red Sox,
what if he takes a little less money to stay with the Yankees? I know you said about the Red Sox.
I think that's okay. I think that's there's nothing you could do about that because to me that's the Yankee lore. He was a Yankee.
The advantage of trading for him, which is one thing I pointed out.
He went to the World Series with them, which like that you could. It's not going to be easy, but you could at least tolerate that. I could not tolerate him taking less money to go to Boston.
Oh, God, I would love to see that. Real quick, Sal, before we get the calls. Hoff, I know you said it in my ear. My bad. December 21, was that when Yamamoto signed? Thank you, bud. So, since we were doing percentages before, percentage that Soto signs before December 21st.
I think it's 100%.
I would say 99. I'll leave that door slightly ajar.
I think he's signing next week.
I'm with you.
I shouldn't say that. I think he's signing by the end of next week, the absolute latest.
The end of, so not this week, the end of next week.
Yeah, well, by the winter meeting.
Like the 15th-ish? Think it's signed. I think it's done by the 15th.
Yeah, I think so.
I really do. Well, I mean, it's already December 3rd.
Sunday's the 15th. I think within the next 10 days.
Yeah,
I'm
with you.
I think you get it during the week. I hope during the week. I don't want that.
I hope at 10:07.
Yeah, well, I mean, now we're getting picky. I take it at 9:59.
True. No, I wouldn't take it at 9:59 because then Recco's doing it, and I love Jerry's updates. They're great, but it's got to happen here.
All right.
I need the organic reaction from everybody, including me.
Can we take some bets, like, really?
Go for it.
When do you think it's going to? I know you want it here, but when do you realistically, which show do you think it's going to land on?
This show. All the news breaks on this show.
Yeah, I'm going to say that
football news.
I'm going to say we're not going to get the... We're not going to have that luxury. Maybe I'm just trying to, like, jinx it because I want it so bad. We got screwed last year with the Yamamoto thing. We weren't even on, right?
I know. And we talked about that as much as anybody in the world.
I have one for you. I know when it's going to happen.
When?
It's going to happen at 2:03 a.m. when Paul Rosenberg is filling in for Chris McMonagle.
Like the Correa stuff when Sal called in back in the day.
And then Sal had to call in. Wait a second.
So last year, were we off that? I don't get it. Well, it happened Thursday.
The 21st.
Right, but that's a Thursday. I'm just looking back at the calendar.
And then we worked the next day, right?
Did we? Yeah, we must have. And that was the day before we went away. So we did get to react to it, but it just happened, I think, at night. I remember doing like a podcast or whatever for it. But
yeah,
we
reacted to it.
Yeah,
you know what we should?
It happened in the evening, though. We weren't, you know.
Yeah, I would like to listen. I got to listen to it. Maybe we'll take a little snippet from how we reacted to the Yamamoto stuff. We'll have that ready for you.
I quit.
I'm the pro.
I think we were both like. There was no blood drawn, so it was whatever.
It was kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah, we were back and forth for weeks and months, and he chose the freaking Dodgers.
I know.
Can't happen this time. Elvis is in Orange, Connecticut. What's up, Elvis?
Sal.
Yeah.
You know I'm a big Mets fan, and I know you are. We're talking about Juan Soto like he is Mickey Mantle. Do me a favor. Can you guys bring up his lifetime stats?
Yeah, we've done it.
He's a 285 hitter. He's an overrated player.
What's his lifetime batting average? What is it?
285.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's overrated.
He's definitely overrated.
I agree. I've always said that.
I mean, if we sign him for this kind of money, I mean, what else are we going to get on the Mets team? I mean,
a lot.
We're actually not like what? We're going to lose Alonso. We may lose a couple of pitchers. I mean, then if we get Soto, do you think we're a better team?
Yes.
I mean, what do we do?
Well, it has to be Soto plus Elvis. It's not just Soto and let everybody else go. That's not how they're going to operate. They're going to build a rotation. Like, I got news for you. The Mets aren't going to go into the year with the rotation that they have right now. They're going to add other arms. They're not going to be the top guys, and I don't want them to be the top guys. Now, they need to add another big bat. It's got to be Soto and Alonso, or and Adamas, or and Vladimir Guerrero. Okay, so we're on the same page.
Yeah, if we get all those guys, okay, all right. Now
not all,
talking,
two of them.
I mean, all right, but we need another pitcher, too.
Hey,
we need,
for Judge while you're at it?
Yeah, no. Look at the Dodgers.
I mean, they buy players constantly. That's what I want the Mets to do. But if we get Soto, like you said, we don't get anybody else. I mean, we got to get somebody else, because this guy, he doesn't deserve that kind of money. That's insane.
I tend to agree. Now, well, I agree to an extent. He deserves the money, and he's going to get the money because he's up, and the timing is the timing, and he's in the just entering his prime. But I do think there's a massive, and I've said this on the show, a massive inflation of who Juan Soto is. Let me ask you a question, Sal. Do you think that Miguel Cabrera ever took steroids? We have said, okay, neither do I. I agree with you. Based on his body, based on the way he deteriorated naturally. This is a guy who's worth this is a generational hitter, all right? Miguel Cabrera, how old Soto? 26. From the age of 26 to 32, he hit 324, 328, 344, 330, 348, 313, 338, 5 of the 6 years, OPS over 1,000, 126 ribbies, 139 ribbies, 44 bombs, 44 bombs, 48 doubles, 52 doubles. Come on, man. I mean, Juan Soto is good. But I think that people misrepresent who he is every day.
I know what he is.
And he's a 285 hitter.
Yeah, okay, but you're picking out his... What's his OPS?
I don't have that in front of me. But it's obviously good,
yeah,
Sal.
There's a reason why he's going to get paid.
You think Pujols took steroids?
I think saying he's a 285 hitter is picking a weakness. And by the way, 285 isn't bad.
No, that's his strength. His weakness is his defense anymore. And his base running. Yeah, that's his actual weakness.
I'm not worried about that. You're not paying for that. Who cares?
Understand that, but you're not getting anything.
I'm not worried about that.
No, but Sal, Miguel Cabrera couldn't run, but he hit 350 every year.
The reason why I personally value Juan Soto is because he is not afraid of anything. He welcomes the pressure and the moments, whether it is the postseason against the best of the best, the biggest and the baddest. He has done it before multiple times over, whether it is New York. He has proven himself to be a clutch performer. He's a beast in the batter's box every single time he sets foot in there. Okay, does he hit 330? No, it's not 1985. I don't need him to hit 330. I want him to do what he does for the next 10 years. And what he does well is something that projects to age well. Have great at bats, whether it's draw walks, be patient, whatever it may be, and square up a baseball, hit it hard somewhere, opposite field, double, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Soto taking at bats is going to age well. Defense, sure, it's going to be an issue. That's what the luxury of the DH is for. Running, I don't care. You know, he's not a perfect player. There are no perfect players. So to me, you want to talk about $700 million? I don't think anybody's worth that much. I don't think Ohtani's worth that much, even with pitching. So whatever, that's just the market value for him.
Now listen, again, I want Soto in the two-hole in front of Aaron Judge, yeah. But the way this has been hijacked, I know we got to break, the generational Juan Soto. So honestly, explore that moniker, generational. So basically what you're telling us, we've never seen anybody like Juan Soto. So in all the years we've watched baseball, I've never seen a guy hit 285 who's an average right fielder who can't run. I mean, think about how stupid that is. The generational Juan Soto.
Well, I think
it's not applicable.
I think it's the OPS and the way he takes at bats. And also 26 years of age. When you talk about being able to get him at 26 years old. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan. Continuing with your calls at 888-808-1019. Dude, how much fun was FanFest?
It was awesome.
I loved it. Did you end up taking Colt out there this year?
I did not. The short answer is no. We just had too much going on, blah, blah, blah. But I wanted to, and it was awesome. Remember the coolest thing I saw as soon as we walked in at the Javits Center? Andre the Giant's massive boots.
Yeah,
love were on that display.
Stuff.
It was great.
They had nostalgia, all interactive stuff. We were doing shows out there. And guess what? Even though you didn't get a chance to take Colt out last year, well, you have your chance now this year as Fanatics Fest is returning to New York City next year. 3-day fan favorite event. Returns to NYC's Javits Center from June 20th through the 22nd of 2025. It drew more than 70,000 fans last year, more than 500 top athletes. It was tremendous. Exclusive pre-sale ticket window will begin December 5th. It was great. I mean, for sports fans, to me, even at 45, I loved it. But imagine, a 10-year-old or 15-year-old me.
Oh, my God.
I think it's tremendous.
It's pretty much, think about it, it's like Comic-Con for sports. I think this thing is going to grow by the year. I think it's going to be insane. I mean, it's interactive, whether it's shooting hoops or firing pucks or doing UFC stuff.
Yeah, the wrestling entrances, they had so much cool stuff.
Yeah, the cards, the trading card aspect, just phenomenal.
So we have our chance to go back again. I'm glad they're doing it again. That was the first time the inaugural season or launch was last year, so obviously they're coming back now for year two. Fanatics Fest returning June 20th, 2025, obviously the 20th through the 22nd. And like I said, exclusive pre-sale ticket window will begin December 5th.
And that's when Mad Dog swung by our set and was hanging with us.
Right?
We had Chris hop on for a good 15, 20 minutes.
We had some fun with that. Actually, I met Michael Vick.
You met Vick?
Yeah, well, I met him in the room.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Anyway, Clay Holmes, BT, has been rumored in many ways here. And an odd one yesterday, there was reports that the Mets are interested in Clay Holmes, which you say, okay, well, yeah, sure. Why wouldn't they be? He was a good bullpen arm, proven in New York. You don't need him to be the closer. You have him be the 7th, 8th inning guy, whatever. But no, the Mets rumored to be interested in Clay Holmes to be a starter, which just doesn't make any sense to me.
I think it makes more sense than you think. I don't know if it makes complete sense. I want to be fair. I do think it's out of the box thinking, and I think it's very interesting. Like to the point where, I mean, I know he's going to be an ex-Yankee, but I kind of wish the Yankees were thinking out of the box and they were thinking about maybe converting him and saying, all right, Stroman, peace out, or Cortez. I don't know if you're going to really be healthy enough to make 25 or 30 starts. I think he's very interesting. He throws multiple fastballs. We know the sinker is power pitch. And I think that when you start, see, the problem with Clay Holmes as a closer, although he adapted to the other role setting up, Luke Weaver, et cetera.
He can give you multiple innings, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. And when you're a primarily sinker, a hard power sinker is your best pitch. If you're not spot on right away, you're going to lose the zone. And I remember saying this to you early on during your struggles. I said, listen, it's a nasty pitch when you start it at the right spot. Just imagine like the catcher being crouched. And let's say like a power sinker is supposed to start pretty much as it presents itself to the hitter at the face mask of the catcher. And then it darts down, and it really darts down hard where it's basically camouflaged as a strike, but there's no chance to do anything other than beat it into the ground, which is what made Clay Holmes amazing. The problem with Holmes is if it doesn't start at the face mask or mid-chest on the chest protector, it's going to dive too far down. It's not going to present itself as a strike early on. It's going to be a ball, and then eventually he's going to have to groove one because you start putting guys on base in a one-run game. When you're a closer, you got problems. So I actually think as a starter, he would maybe have a little more freedom to figure that out. And by the way, he started 114 games in the minors, 40 of which were AAA. Now, I know that was a while ago, but he's proven durable in terms of health. You might not like him for the Mets. I would actually like to see the Yankees convert him to a starter.
I'll take him in the bullpen. I mean, that's what he's good at. The whole reason you mentioned he started a bunch of games in the minor league, so then why do you think they got away from that? Because he wasn't good enough as a starter. See, the Mets have this thing, and I'll tell you, we talked about it with Montas. If they fix him, then, you know what, all bets are off as far as I'm concerned. If you could fix Frankie Montas and make him a good pitcher in New York, then that Mets lab is, I mean, undeniable. So maybe they can fix Clay Holmes. I personally, and call me crazy, and many of you have, I would just prefer to go out there and get, you know, an actual starting pitcher as opposed to reclamation projects. I'm not opposed to all reclamation projects, but you get one starter who isn't any good in Frankie Montas.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
And you're hoping you could turn him into a good pitcher. Now you're thinking about going and getting a good reliever and trying to make him into a starter. Like, how about you just go get a starter?
How about you do both? One sure thing, like a Max Fried, and then take a little bit of a flyer on this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I want Walker Buehler.
Yeah, I know you do. And there's some rumblings about that. 2 years, what?
How much? 50, I didn't see
that. He's going to get 2 years, 50? Maybe the Mets are reaching out to Buehler, so that's something you want.
Yeah, I mean, other teams have been in Yankees. I know have been rumored with him, too. I want Buehler. I take, you know, all the guys out there, Pivetta or Eovaldi. Like, there are a bunch of solid arms. You're going to take Clay Holmes and make him. And by the way, the Mets need a bullpen as well.
Well, here's the thing. If you get him, and he's also insurance for Edwin Diaz.
Yeah.
I mean, no. I mean,
you don't love him closing, but still, yeah.
I mean, me neither. But, I mean, if Diaz is right, Diaz is obviously going to lock it down for you guys. But this is also a growing trend in baseball, Sal, whether it's Michael King or Seth Lugo or the kid Little or Jordan Hicks from San Francisco now with that 4-year deal last season going for the pen to the starter. I think this is more transferable. I think his talents are, that it's transferable enough. What, his pure stuff? I think it's actually a pretty interesting thought.
BT and Sal back on the Fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call, which we'll get back to those calls coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk some football now with our buddy Brian Baldinger. Did you see, BT, before we get to Baldy, did you see him break down Evan Neal? I heard them talking about it on the morning show.
I did not.
Basically saying how bad Evan Neal was. We'll ask him about that right now as we are joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo, game day, be delicious. Baldy, I do want to start with that Evan Neal thing. How bad of a pick was Evan Neal?
Well, I'll say this. His performance on Thanksgiving against Dallas is the single worst performance by an offensive tackle I've seen in the league this year.
Wow.
Because, like, you can't play tackle on the ground. Now, bad athletes are on the ground. You can't play on the ground. He's on the ground. I did a whole video. I didn't post it because it's too damning. But, you know, I mean, he can't hold his point. All right? I mean, he's off balance. It's not a good – now, I don't know if he doesn't look healthy because nobody should be, like, thrown around the way he was thrown around. So I don't know if the ankle's healed, not healed. So I don't want to – you know,
yeah,
step on a guy that might be injured, because it doesn't look like he can keep his feet in the ground right now.
I was going to say, like, is he weak? Is he slow? Does he have no anticipation? Is it check, 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 everything? Well, I mean, let me ask you this. What does he do well?
not much. I mean, he's not moving the line. You know, a guy that's 340 pounds, you think, you're okay, you got some power. Yeah. You move the line of scrimmage, but he's not really a powerful guy.
Huh.
And then he's not really quick. And people go, well, if you put him inside, like Mekhi Becton's playing great at guard. But Mekhi Becton has got elite movement. He was. He just couldn't stay healthy.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know, if, you know, but he's. I don't think he could go inside and play the guard. I don't think he's quick enough to play inside against some of the guys, like Jalen Carter, Chris Jones, some of these guys you got to, Dexter Lawrence, guys you got to compete with inside that have got quickness. I don't know that he could go inside and you could hide him there right now.
You know, Baldy, I mean, it's just been a mess every which way you look with these teams. We started with the Giants, so might as well stick there. I mean, is there any way out of this thing? How much of it would you say is on the quarterback play? How much of it is on the head coach, the system? Where are you? It just seems like a total loss season and a mess in every which way, shape, or form. They're 2-10 now, another loss to the down Cowboys on Thanksgiving. Is there any way out for the New York Giants?
I mean, look, they go to New, they got New Orleans this week. I don't know what kind of turnout you're going to get for the Saints. I mean, they've won a couple games under their interim head coach. They've got talent on their team. I mean, you got to find a way to win a game. You can't finish 2-15. You just can't. You got to find a way to win a game. And so, you know, Drew Locke, like, they've got some talent with, you know, with what Tracy's doing and what Malik can do, but it's not enough of it. And they've got liabilities right now. They commit a lot of penalties and they put themselves in negative situations a lot. And so, you know, but you can't go 2-15. You can't go 2-15 and bring everybody back. As much as I know Mr. Mara would love to do that and not make another change, you can't finish 2-15. You've got to find a way to win one or at least two of these games here down the stretch.
Yeah, Baldy, so we had Jermaine Illuminor on earlier, and we've had him on a lot this year. And I asked him about the and he's actually looked pretty good on the film for you, right? It's just as a quick aside?
Yeah, no, Jermaine. Jermaine's played well.
Yep.
I mean, he didn't want to have to go to left tackle. He had to because of the situation there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not where he wanted to go. I mean, he was playing very good.
Yep.
You know, him and Van Roten were a pretty good right side.
Yeah, and I asked about the culture, and, you know, and he gave us his answer, which I respect, obviously. He's in it, so it's a little different maybe how we perceive it. I don't know that you can necessarily get a culture answer from film, but you can certainly get a sense of, you know, how much these guys are committed to one another, how hard they're playing. Are the Giants playing hard?
I think they're trying. I think defensively they can play harder for sure. But I think they're trying. I mean, you got to stay on the field on third downs, and they're terrible on third downs. You know, they can't sustain offense right now. Some of it is, you know, the quarterback play for sure. I mean, that's definitely been an issue. But the offense, I mean, it's everything. And so I think Dable's trying to do everything he can to, like, sustain some offense, to move the ball. But, you know, obviously it's, you know, this losing streak here, it's been ugly. And so it's hard to say, well, guys aren't playing hard. Well, I mean, you got to score points. You can't win games if you're not scoring points. They're not scoring.
Yeah, they're not. It's been, oh, my God, the Giants have been really tough to watch this year. I mean, the Jets have been maybe the biggest disappointment in the history of sports based on where they are and what the expectations were. Nobody had those for the Giants, so the Jets are a different eyesore. Let's get to them here. All right, so listen, Rodgers keeps missing throws, and there's a lot of levels of breakdown here. You know, there's a part of me, and I don't want to necessarily watch Tyrod Taylor, although I do respect him, but there's a piece of me that wants to see Tyrod Taylor play to see at some point this year, like operationally, if the Jets do a little bit better with Tyrod's. It's almost like if Tyrod plays and he does okay, wouldn't that maybe be the final answer on Aaron Rodgers in a roundabout way?
Yeah, it would. I mean, for example, like it's 21-7. We know that, you know, Big Cat intercepts the pass. Aaron doesn't see him. Goes the distance. All right, 21-14. But the play before that, Aaron's got Garrett Wilson wide open. It's a double move. I mean, it's a gimme.
Yeah.
And he missed it. He flat out missed it. Now, you can say, okay, he had 70 completions to Devontae Adams. What's that all about? You can say they got it first and 10 at the 20, you know, with 2 minutes to, or 30, with 2 minutes to go to go win the game, and you can't get a first down. Like, that throw, that miss to Garrett Wilson, to me, is everything you need to know about Aaron this year. Like, he never misses that throw. Like, Garrett wins so easily. He's got so much room in the end zone to work.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, you could throw that ball underhanded to Garrett.
Hold on a second. So is he missing the throw because he doesn't want to get hit and he's getting rid of the ball too early? Why is he missing that throw?
I feel like he's just rushing everything. Like, I mean, it probably does come down to not wanting to get hit, although he looked healthier than he looked all year in that game, his movement. But he's still, like, he's just rushing his throws. And I know, he can live by his arm. He's got a good arm, okay. But who cares? Like, if you're throwing a ball out of bounds to a wide-open receiver in the end zone, it's not on anybody else but Aaron. And only he could tell you why he's missing that throw. But to me, it looks like he's just trying to get the ball out of his hands way too fast. Rather than just taking and just making a nice, easy, egg toss to Garrett Wilson in that situation. That's 28-7. I don't think Dallas coming back from being down 28-7.
How about the defense there, Bolt? Last one on the Jets. Like, I can't even take the New York teams anymore. There's so much good football around. None of it's here, unfortunately, in New York. But last one on them. Why is their defense so bad this year?
Well, they're not tackling worth a darn. And they don't take the ball away. I mean, they've got 8 takeaways in 12 games right now. 8 takeaways. They don't even get the ball out of guys' hands. Fumbles, and they don't get their hands on any footballs. Intercept them. I mean, it's just they're at the bottom of the list. Only the Raiders are worse. Have fewer takeaways through these, 12 games right now. That's one. And then the tackling is just atrocious. To see him score that last touchdown right up the middle. I mean, nobody is putting the running back on the ground.
Did you jump into the college quarterbacks yet with the film?
I mean, there's Cam Ward in Miami and Shadur Sanders. Mm-hmm. There's guys, but I don't know enough about them yet. To see, for example, if you're watching the development, you watched last night, Bo Nix, his development is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, the first 2 weeks of the season, he literally could not complete a pass to a wide receiver. Now, the whole field's open up. He looks like he's playing Oregon State last night.
He looks great.
In a shootout game. I mean, it's unbelievable to see the development. And so, I don't know how these guys are going to develop, if they're, because at first I thought, this Bo Nix thing is going to, not going to be a good experiment, but my golly, man, that guy is hitting every single moving target there is right now. Yeah. And his movement and arm are elite. So, I don't know how to project these guys yet because I haven't studied them hard enough.
No, understood. I just wanted to see if you had a cursory sense. Listen, by the way, I think Nick's played, 61 college games here? So that's a check in the column of getting some reps, something that Darnold didn't do coming to the Jets or Zach Wilson didn't do. I mean, now you need to pair it up with a great innovative mind like Sean Payton, but you get a guy who's got at least enough of the requisite talents, who's taken a lot of snaps and coached by somebody who knows what he's doing, it's going to probably go pretty well.
Yep. No, there's no question. I mean, the most starts by any college quarterback entering the NFL ever, and COVID helped, and he was at Auburn, then Oregon, so all that stuff helped him. But he used all of it, and so he learned 2 different systems in college. He's learning a 3rd system here with Sean. He coaches the quarterback hard, and I don't think things could have gone any better through these first 13 weeks of the season.
How about one more rookie quarterback, Baldy? You hear anything about Penix potentially taking over? Atlanta's lost 3 in a row. Cousins is just, I can't watch him. He's an interception machine. They should be better than what they are. Is Penix going to? And nobody's questioning that pick anymore, conveniently. Is he going to take over?
Well, here's what's interesting. So I did Minnesota's game last Sunday against Arizona. I talked to Sam Darnold on the field. Daniel Jones was there, the whole thing. But after I saw I saw Atlanta's game, and I saw Kirk Cousins. And this is a big deal. I mean, Atlanta's going back to Minnesota this week. It's the Kirk Cousins, comeback here. And I'm saying they got to play Penix. Because I know Michael Penix. That kid, he was my favorite quarterback in the draft. Like, that kid is an elite athlete. He's got the best arm. He's smart as can be. That kid might be able to rescue this team. Now, if they played him from the very beginning, I think they'd probably be winning the division handily. But I don't know if they could go to Minnesota right now and sit Kirk Cousins. I don't know that they could do that to him. But he was horrible last week. I mean, the pick 6 was awful, and that was the difference in the game.
Yeah. And by the way, what did you think of Jones with the Vikings, Daniel Jones signing with Minnesota?
I think it's a good sign.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin O'Connell can flat-out coach. I mean, Sam has got, obviously this is more than a renaissance. This is what he always wanted. But, he's got great talent around him. He's got a great play caller. He bought the team like Aaron couldn't do last week against Seattle. Brought the team right down the field to go win the game. It came down to the final, the final plays, and he made every play to go down there and win the game for him. And, you know, they got a nice shiny record, and they're going to have a chance to win the division before it's all over with Sam.
Yeah, Baldy, how about the NFC? How about the NFC West? I thought the Arizona Cardinals have been playing better. Of course, they lose two in a row. You get the Rams playing tough brand of football, coach very well. Niners falling, you know, off the face of the earth with the injuries, just maybe not their year. And Seattle, I mean, you saw the comeback. You mentioned it against the Jets. What are we looking at in the NFC West? Who do you think is the best team there?
Well, I think Arizona, like, can do it. They play Seattle at home this week. And if they win, both Seattle and Atlanta will, or Arizona will be 7-6, you know, with four games left to go. So, and there's a lot of division games in there. I mean, you can never count out Sean McVay. He found a way to win the game the other day. You can never count him out with Matt Stafford and Puka and Cooper Kupp. Like, they're always going to be right there. So I think it's going to come down to the final week of the season in the NFC West. But if Seattle goes and beats Arizona and gets to a four-game win streak right now, then Seattle is probably going to win the division.
What about just the overall, Baldy, top three teams in football? It seems like it's the Lions. It seems like it's the Eagles. And I probably put the Bills in there. I'd be curious to get your take and who you think right now would be playing in the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, those are three best teams right now. And all three teams, you know, have a legitimate MVP candidate, Jared Goff, you know, and obviously what Saquon is doing. And then if you, you know, look what Josh Allen's doing, all three of those guys could be the MVP of the league through 13 weeks. But, you know, they got a game Thursday night now. Detroit goes to Green Bay, and both teams can take the ball away. Both teams have quarterbacks that are playing really good football. I mean, that's going to be one of the games of the year on this Thursday night. Might go a long ways to deciding who's going to get home field advantage in the NFC right now.
That's going to be a fun one. Baldy, final thing for me. What do you think, whether it's a spot that's already opened up, probably not, or one that will, most appealing job destination this offseason will be where?
Well, I don't know. If Miami opened up, I don't know if it will, but if Miami opened up, that they certainly got a lot of talent there, a lot of speed. It might open up. I don't know. I don't have any sort of premonition.
It seems like his quirky ways are getting a little played out down there.
But I mean, Chicago, I mean, maybe Thomas Brown is the interim head coach. We're going to see him this weekend again. You know, he's going to interview well. He's got this offense like back on track. Like Thomas Brown might win that job in Chicago, but I mean, that's still an attractive job. They still have a lot of talent there and a young quarterback who's playing better under a good offensive coordinator and has a chance to play at a really high level. I mean, that could be a good job as well.
Let me ask you this, though. Then we know Dallas is a mess because Jerry Jones has been a mess for a while. If McCarthy, if he's let go here, would he make sense for either the Jets or the Giants?
Yeah.
No?
I don't know. I'm not in love.
All right, tell me why. Tell us why.
I don't know. You know, the playoff performance, obviously they've come up small underneath them. And that's what it's all about for any of these teams. I mean, he could win 12 games with Dak and, you know, and CD and, you know, a decent running back, Tony Pollard, when they had one, and Mike, and, you know, they had enough talent to go win 12 games, but like the playoff performances were awful. And that was with Kellen Moore. That was with him calling the plays. And you just wonder, like, is it enough? Does he have enough what Kevin O'Connell, Sean McVay, some of these coordinators, you know, Ben Johnson, some of these coordinators are out there that are lighting it up. Does he have enough of that in him to be innovative enough to turn either one of these programs around?
Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Baldy, thank you. Looking forward to talking to you next week.
Good job, bud.
You got it, guys. Take care, man.
Yeah, there's a lot there, BT. I know we're all over the place.
Nice.
Well, I mean, the local team's just,
it's tough.
It's over. It's over. We know it. Nobody wants to see it. Now, I still believe in Rodgers, and that's a topic for a different day. But, like, we all know he's not going to be back in all likelihood. It's a matter of who's going to be running things for the Jets. Same thing with the Giants. We're just finding out. Like, if the Giants don't win this Sunday, then they're over, meaning Shane and Dable. How could they survive? They're not beating the Ravens. They're not beating the Colts. They're not beating the Falcons. Mm-hmm. They're not beating the Eagles. Even if the Eagles have nothing to play for, I still don't think the Giants are going to beat mm-hmm. the Philadelphia Eagles. Like,
I think even a win against New Orleans doesn't necessarily cement anything favorably for them. They could win this game, and they could still get blown out.
Right, but if it doesn't, if they don't win this game at home, they're probably going to go winless at home. Oof. How can you just, like, it's going to be the worst
winless
season
at home.
In the history of the franchise.
It's like an expansion
team, dude.
I don't
want to talk about the Jets and Giants anymore with Baldy. We could have our conversation on our own. There's a lot going on around the league.
Another Thursday's game's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and you know what it makes me think of? That Thursday, like, everybody's looking at the lines, right? We do our power rankings. We'll do that Thursday again. We'll power up with the power rankings. Lions have been a top team for weeks now, 11-1, just looking dominant. Dude, Minnesota has not cracked either of our top five at all. And they're 10-2. They're right behind them.
You know,
in
it's got to be the remnants of Darnold staying here.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, we know he's playing well, but we're a little reluctant to give it up.
All right, that was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. We'll come back with more of your calls, BT and Sal on the Fan.